DW Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link, your window to the stories making headlines across Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Mimi Mefo. We are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and on our partner radio stations across the continent.
And coming up in today's show, Gambia's former defense minister admits to killing critics of ex-president Yahya Jammeh.
You executed these people in cold blood.
Absolutely.
That is a crime.
I agree, sir.
You are responsible for that crime.
I am responsible, sir.
Drought and conflict has displaced hundreds of thousands in Somalia, but the problem doesn't end there.
Many parts of the country are affected by active conflict. Humanitarian organizations are very restricted in where we can move and how we can reach people.
Stay tuned for these stories and more, but as always, before we return, let's give way to other stories making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Mozambique's President Filipe Nyusi was forecasted to be heading towards a landslide victory following the country's elections. Data from polling stations currently puts Nyusi in the lead with 70% of the vote. However, the opposition Renamo Party says the election was tarnished by fraud and has called for the provisional results to be annulled. The Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa said some polling stations received far more votes than registered voters after last week's election. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said his country would get millions of people ready if there was a war with Egypt over a disputed dam project. But Ahmed said it should not come to that.
The Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam will recognize Ethiopia's integrity and benefit. Secondly, the project differentiates wishful thinking from propaganda and is being implemented based on scientific principles and awareness. Thirdly, this project will be completed in such a way that the downstream countries will not be harmed. Ethiopians do not have the desire to harm Egyptians. Rather, they only want to benefit from the dam.
UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Tuesday said there would be another election if his Brexit bill was rejected. British lawmakers have been considering halting Johnson's bill from going through the House of Commons in just 3 days. The UK is expected to leave the European Union in 9 days. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said Tuesday that he was not certain about the German defense minister's plan to establish an internationally controlled security zone in Syria.
One thing is clear to me. A security zone which permanently stabilizes Turkey's military actions would not be worthy of the name, and a recognition and strengthening of the Assad regime through the back door must not happen either.
Durch die Hintertür darf es auch nicht geben.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan met to discuss their roles in finding solutions for the Syrian conflict. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has been re-elected after a tight election that saw his party reduced to a minority. Trudeau is expected to form a coalition government with a smaller left-wing party. The Liberals may join with the New Democrats, who helped keep Liberal minority governments in power in the 1970s and in 2005. Japan has a new emperor in the palace. Naruhito has formally accepted the throne after his father, Emperor Akihito, abdicated the throne earlier this year.
I hereby swear that I will act according to the constitution and fulfill my responsibility as the symbol of the state and of the unity of the people of Japan, while always praying for the happiness of the people and the peace of the world, as I always stand with the people.
For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
And of course, you are listening to Africa Links on DW Africa. We are live from Bonn, Germany. I am Mimi Mifu.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Thank you to all those that are joining us on our Facebook page. We have Richie listening from South Africa, somebody in the Middle East, Cameroon, and all those places. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, let's get down to business. The right-hand man of Gambia's former president, Edward Zingate, has made shocking revelations, admitting he was responsible for the arrest, torture and execution of political opponents during Yahya Jammeh's leadership.
Now, speaking before the Truth and Reconciliation, as well as a Reparation Commission, Captain Edward revealed his role in the 1994 coup that brought former President Yahya Jammeh to power. DW's Omar Wale told me Gambians have urged the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to ensure that justice prevails.
He made several revelations, including the reasons that led to the 1994 coup d'etat, and the 1994 counter coup that was allegedly staged by the former president. According to Edward, two of his former colleagues, Lieutenant Sana Sabali and Basiru Baro, were accused of plotting to overthrow Jammeh months after Jammeh came into power. But he said he was the one who arrested those two men, bundled them into pickup and sent them to Mile 2 Central Prison. The two men were in prison. Sana Sabali survived and he was later convicted and served 9 years in prison, while Sadibu Haider, who was the interior minister at the time, could not survive. He died during the pre-trial. He also said he was present when several military officers were marked and shot at different locations in the country, one at the Fajara military barracks and the Yundu military barracks, but he denied participating in those killings.
I did not fire my weapon. I still deny that I discharged my weapon at Basiru Baro and Dotfal on that day.
But in any case,
yes, sir.
As at that time you left State House,
yes, sir.
Your common plan,
yes, sir.
The plan you agreed with Yahya Jammeh and all council members was to take no prisoners, correct?
Absolutely.
And that was the plan that was implemented at Yundum Barracks, at Fajara Barracks.
Absolutely, sir.
You executed these people in cold blood just on the basis of that common plan to take no prisoners.
Absolutely.
That is a crime.
I agree, sir.
You are responsible for that crime.
I am responsible, sir.
What have been the reactions of people in Gambia following the latest development?
There have been mixed reactions since Edward's arrival, because many people expected him to admit to some of his crimes, but collectively he will take responsibility, but individually he will deny those ones. And Edward is accused of killing the former finance minister, so that casts doubt among many Gambians, and this is what they had to say.
He said what he thinks is right. So that's how the Gambian people will take it. Because in the sense that of what people expect for him to accept that he did so many crimes, if he didn't do it, he can't accept it.
Edward is not taking individual responsibilities. The only responsibilities that he's taking is collective responsibilities. And we cannot reconcile or we cannot know the truth if you don't take individual responsibility to say, I did this.
That is DW's correspondent there in Gambia, Omar Wale, speaking to me earlier about the confession of the defense minister in Gambia.
And of course, Mimi, this story has generated a lot of feedback on our Facebook page. We have Livingstone Tete writing, culprits must be punished to serve as a deterrent to others. The families of those opposition leaders and soldiers must be compensated.
And another person, he's called Ose Amenyan, says that we are still waiting for the confession on the murder of 44 Ghanaians in the Gambia that was in 2005, which Jammeh's government was the main culprit.
Well, keep those comments coming. And now let's move to the international stage. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has won a second term, but will now have to form a minority government.
And his Liberal Party's 157 seats was 13 short of the 170 needed for an absolute majority. DW Sholam Jaisimi has more.
Congratulatory messages have already begun to pour in for the 48-year-old Prime Minister after results came in from Monday's election. United States President Donald Trump and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson have both tweeted, with the leader of Canada's southern neighbours calling it a hard-fought victory. And a hard-fought victory indeed it was for Trudeau. Plagued by scandals that tarnished his image in the run-up to elections when photos emerged of him as black and brown face in his younger days, this sparked accusations of racist bigotry And when his attorney general disclosed that he put pressure on her to end a case involving a Quebec company, it seemed it was time for a political wilderness for Trudeau. But the voters thought otherwise, giving Trudeau a second term, albeit with a reduced majority from the 2015 election. And speaking to supporters on Tuesday, Trudeau said,
"From coast to coast to coast, tonight Canadians rejected division and negativity. They rejected cuts and austerity, and they voted in favor of a progressive agenda and strong action on climate change."
Trudeau will most likely rely on the New Democrats, which won 24 seats, to form a government and pass legislation.
And that report was compiled by Shola Jaisimi here at DW. We take you back to the continent, where more than 300,000 people have been displaced by conflict and drought in Somalia this year alone. That's according to the Norwegian Refugee Council.
Insecurity in the Horn of Africa nation is making it harder for those in need to get humanitarian assistance and forcing them to move to overcrowded camps in urban areas. Suze Van Meegen is advocacy manager for the NRC in Somalia and currently in Mogadishu. She's been sharing with me the picture of what's happening on the ground.
Well, I would say the humanitarian situation, it's incredibly long-standing and it's incredibly complex. Somalia is not a country that we hear about in the same way that you hear about more active conflict-affected countries. But the crisis itself is still among the worst in the world. We are seeing thousands of people, 300,000 to date through the course of 2019, fleeing their homes, many due to conflict and many due to drought. The combination of these factors is creating a disastrous situation. In 2011, Somalia was hit by a horrendous famine that killed more than 250,000 people. So since then, we've seen a very impressive and consolidated effort from the humanitarian community, from international donors and governments, to ensure that Somalia is protected from ever experiencing anything like that again. But having said that, it's an incredibly difficult operating environment. Many parts of the country are affected by active conflict. Humanitarian organizations are very restricted in where we can move and how we can reach people.
When you speak of restrictions, who exactly imposes these restrictions? Is it the African Union peacekeepers or is it the Al-Shabaab militia?
Well, at the moment, there are a number of security restrictions that we assess the security situation as humanitarians, and we need to make a decision about where we can go in the best interests of our staff and ensuring that the aid they deliver actually reaches people. But beyond that, we also see restrictions imposed by donor governments, by the US. Recently, we've heard that the Netherlands is looking to introduce legislation that would prevent us from moving into areas under the control of non-state armed groups. This would have serious implications for us on a legal front. So it's not only the physical barriers and the conflict, but it's the bureaucratic ones being imposed by governments around the world.
Do you fear that there would be another surge of refugees to neighboring countries because of what is happening at the moment?
I think there's been enormous steps taken in recent years to ensure that as many Somali people can stay within Somalia as possible, because that is ultimately where people want to be. They want to be in their homes. They want to be able to continue with their jobs, with their farming practice. So on that basis, at the moment, we're only seeing movement within the country. Having said that, we do need ongoing support to be able to reach them. If people don't have access to the aid they need, if they are frightened about feeding their children, if they feel unsafe and unprotected, we may see ongoing movement.
Norwegian Refugee Council Advocacy Manager for Somalia, Suze Van Meegen in Mogadishu.
And so many of you on our social media platform, DW Africa, you have been responding to this story on Gambia, where the ex-number two, and right-hand man of the former president, Yahya Jammeh, has admitted that he was responsible for opposition killings in the country during the reign of the former leader. Crispin, we've had a lot of reactions.
That's true. And live on our Facebook page, Farouk Hussein Farouk writes, "The West are yet still running after Yahya Jammeh in order to see his final downfall. Hashtag wake up Africa."
And Rita Lobo says that forgiveness should also be added to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Gambia.
We have a comment from Wallace McMorrison, and he writes, the only thing to be done for justice to prevail is by bringing Jammeh back to the Gambia to stand trial and persecuted for his crimes. Dictators must be made to pay heavily, even if it means paying with their blood. Oh, that's a very tough one. They know what they were doing was bad, so no sympathy, he says.
Those are your comments. Keep more coming in. You're listening to Africa Link live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Once more, I am Mimi Mefo.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Thank you for joining us live on from Bonn, Germany, and also on our Facebook page. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, buying medicine with just a tap of your finger in Uganda.
When I used the online app, these people were able to bring a hepaticum syrup to me directly, and I was able to start administering it to the child the way the doctor had directed me to do.
You definitely don't want to miss out on that story. But first, we have to go to Cameroon, where there has been mixed reactions among Cameroonians at home and those in the diaspora after a separatist, Lekiaka Oliver, known as Field Marshal, officially enthroned himself as king of Lebialem in one of the restive regions of the country.
The separatist military wing, the Ambazonia Defense Forces, has also criticized the move by Field Marshal, urging him to unconditionally leave the throne. As the prolonged crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking regions rages on, some traditional rulers in the southwest region have been forced to leave the village. Moji Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, where chess traditional rulers from Lebialem have escaped for safety.
Hundreds of people in Esuata, an English-speaking village in southwestern Cameroon, applaud as Lekiaka Oliver, popularly known as Field Marshal, guarded by his fighters and dressed in traditional regalia, announces he is now king of Lebialem. He urges the people to trust him.
No one here in Lebialem should be afraid. I love my people. I love all of my people.
The video of Field Marshal, accompanied by several women he says are his wives, has been watched by millions of people. Andreas Likunze Nembo, lawmaker, traditional ruler of southwest Bamumbu village, and president of the Lebialem Chiefs Conference, says he is scandalized.
Those are just dreams of an ambitious son who is greedy and who has lost his path. When you looked at the typical villagers, they were promised if you didn't come out, you'll face the wrath.
Andreas Likunze Nembo, who has escaped to Yaoundé for safety, adds that he and other traditional rulers of Lebialem are outraged by the desecration of their palaces.
If we are not home, it's because we are peace lovers. We don't want to spill blood. And so we felt threatened, we felt a danger, and that's why not only us, but a good portion of our populations are out. I don't think that the activities of Mr. Lekiaka Oliver are pro the worship of Lebialem people. He's driving some of the population away from these values, and that's why there's fire.
Cameroonians, both at home and in the diaspora, have largely criticized Field Marshal. Tapang Ivo Tanku, spokesperson of the Ambazonian Defense Forces, the ADF, an armed wing of some separatist fighters, says Lekiaka Oliver has been told to leave the throne.
The Ambazonia Defense Forces strongly condemns that particular action by Field Marshal because it's a possibility that it would ramify into a cultural conflict, and that would be very, very disastrous for this struggle. And we are requesting that the throne be returned to the rightful owner who were elected by their subjects and who were not pushed over to the throne with some guns or with some knives or machetes or whatever.
Most of the 17 chiefs of Lebialem have escaped. At least five from the southwest region were killed by suspected separatist fighters who accused them of supporting the central government in Yaoundé against their independence struggle.
Moki Kinzeka reporting there from Yaounde.
And on our social media platform on Facebook page, we had so many reactions. We simply asked you, what do you think should be the way forward? According to Nomfo Elvis, the people crowned him and he deserves it all. Those who are hand clappers, as he described it, chiefs should never return to the Southwest region. According to him, they call themselves chiefs and kings but abandoned their people at the mercy of the enemy.
And Ayuk Fombe says, not all the chiefs have escaped to Yaounde. Those that believe in the independence struggle are living peacefully with the restoration forces. Only negotiations and sanctions on Yaounde can force them into the negotiation table.
Well, definitely, those are your reactions on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Keep the comments coming in. We shall, of course, be reading them as soon as we have time.
Africa on the move.
Now, this week's Africa on the Move takes us to Uganda, where the government is grappling with massive corruption in its health sector, as many patients report that they are extorted in their desperate need to get treatment.
Currently, the Minister of Health just discovered that unscrupulous people were running their own pharmacies inside government hospitals and selling medicines expensively to unsuspected patients. But with technology, hopefully patients can now get the treatment they need.
Now, a bright Ugandan has started an online pharmacy where one orders for drugs prescribed by physicians and they're delivered directly to their location. Alex Chita has more.
Because you like cars, you have to...
I take a short drive to Kamocha, a popular suburb in the north of Kampala, to meet Julius Seninde. Here, he's renting a small one-roomed office in a building with its paint peeling off. It's not far from the main road, where some motorcycle taxis, known as boda bodas, park and shout as they call for passengers. Hardly one can believe that bright young Ugandans sit here and develop groundbreaking technologies. It is not new elsewhere in the world, but Seninde developed his own app called ePine Farm, where one can create an account to order medicine online and get them delivered to their doorstep.
ePine Farm is an online app whereby someone can access it from the Google Play Store and installs it on the phone. Once you install it, you create up an account with us, and once you do that, you can be able to access all the medicines you like.
In Uganda, it is common for someone to walk into a pharmacy and buy drugs that should be issued with a doctor's prescription. The developer of the app, Julius Seninde, is a qualified pharmacy technician.
So this app, it sells both over-the-counter medicines and then prescription medicines. Whereby over-the-counter, these medicines, whereby client just orders without submitting in a prescription, like the cough medicines, the flu medicines. Then those medicines that can be accessed by a prescription, a client has to first submit in a prescription before he or she orders for medicine, like the antidiabetics, the anti-cancers.
But how do you make sure that the prescription that's sent to you by the client is authentic?
People piloting this, including myself, we are all pharmacy technicians, all people understand the medicines. So we know what a valid prescription looks like.
The app is for now used by people in Kampala and a few nearby districts. Some of the users I spoke to, however, use the app for drugs that are hard to find. One of them is Richard Odiambo.
I moved around the pharmacies in Kampala. I looked for a hepaticum syrup, which was needed and prescribed by Lubaga Hospital for the treatment of my eight-year son who had a problem with hepatitis C. But no pharmacy in the area had this medicine. But when I used the online app, the online pharmacy, these people were able to bring hepaticum syrup to me directly, and I was able to start administering it to the child the way the doctor had directed me to do.
Seninde says they are working with some pharmacies and drug stores in Uganda that when a rare type of medicine is requested, the store with the drug responds instantly and it is delivered to the client at a fee.
As a student, I got a chance to practice in Mulago Hospital, and I realized that people were struggling to get access to medicines, and those that had the medicines really sold them at higher price. I came up with this idea that patients can easily access these medicines in one place and then at a very low price.
The app is a relief to many who seek to avoid long queues in government hospitals. now sending the hopes to extend his innovation soon to the whole East African region.
DW's Alex Jita, the reporting from Kampala.
Focus Europe.
Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas on Tuesday said some of Germany's allies have questioned a proposal by Germany's Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer to create an international security zone in Turkey. Kramp-Karrenbauer told German news agency DPA that the creation of an internationally controlled security zone with the inclusion of Turkey and Russia would de-escalate the situation in northern Syria.
Now, this comes as Russia's President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan were meeting on Tuesday to discuss the ongoing Turkish offensive. Zipporah Nyambura has more on that story.
Germany's defense minister has proposed the establishment of an internationally controlled security zone in Syria hours before a five-day ceasefire between Turkish troops and Syrian Kurdish fighters. The proposal comes as Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Russian President Vladimir Putin were meeting to discuss the Turkish offensive. In an interview with German news agency DPA, Germany's defense minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer said involving Russia and Turkey in the creation of an internationally security zone would help in stabilizing the volatile northern part of Syria.
Mein Vorschlag ist, dass wir
My recommendation is that we establish an internationally controlled security zone in cooperation with Turkey and Russia. And this security zone would seek to resume the fight against terror and against ISIS, which has currently come to a standstill. It would also ensure that we stabilize the region so that rebuilding civilian life is once again possible, and so that those who have fled can also return voluntarily.
The German parliament will need to decide on whether their troops will participate in such a security zone, Kramp-Karrenbauer said. She also told DW that Chancellor Angela Merkel had been informed of the proposal. However, her suggestion has not gone down well with members of her own Christian Democratic Union Party as well as Germany's allies. Here is Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas.
Since yesterday, after the CDU leader's proposal, we have got some questions from our allies, and there is some, this is indisputable, irritation amongst our partners. In light of the described situation, there is currently no discussion among the partners to set up an international security zone.
Turkish troops and allied Syrian fighters invaded northern Syria earlier this month after U.S. President Donald Trump pulled back American troops who had partnered with Syrian Kurdish forces in the years-long war against the Islamic State group. Turkey wants Kurdish militia forces, which it views as terrorists, to leave a safe zone it wants to establish inside Syria.
And that report was by Zipporah Nyambura. Mimi, let's go back to this Cameroonian story. I find it quite intriguing now that we have somebody who has declared himself king. It just adds up to the complexity of the situation in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon. So what now? What happens now?
That's a big question. Just after the national dialogue, there is no way out of this conflict that has been going on for 3 years now. Children unable to go to school. We keep hearing of casualties on a daily basis. And I have the impression that the authorities want to put an end to the crisis without addressing the root cause of the problem. I think the priority should be to seek ways of resolving this conflict, which has been going on for decades.
But then again, with this guy declaring himself king, he just makes it even harder for any bargaining.
Certainly. That's yeah. just telling us how the situation is going to be escalating on a daily basis. The point is not apportioning blames or blaming who is responsible for what or who is committing which atrocity, but to seek ways of resolving this problem because as the government is fighting, the pro-independence fighters are fighting, the local population, the civilian population is suffering.
That's very true. Now, we still have comments here to read. Clovinda Livno says, a captain who abandons his sinking ship is no captain at all. You can't rule from outside the palace. If you're running away, then you did something to make your subjects come after you. Their subjects are still living in the troubled areas.
And Conte Camara equally reacted. She said that we are in support of them, but this separation thing has no way Africa would support their independence bid after Catalan Hong Kong. She's simply saying that what is going on is unacceptable.
Right. And another story that we didn't have time to cover is the Ethiopian one, where Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has caused a social media storm after saying that no one will stop their plans to build a dam on the River Nile.
And we had this reaction from Kuro, who says that what did imperialists and Catalans, charlatans want him to say? That is that for this program. We thank you for listening. I am Mimi Mefo.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Made for Minds.